Welcome to episode 1460 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day, based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. In the previous episode, James reflected on the years he spent as a pillar of the church in Jerusalem. While Peter, Paul, and others traveled across the empire, James remained, teaching, settling disputes, caring for the community, and bearing the weight of leadership. He helped guide the church through its defining debate over Gentile believers, insisting that those turning to God should not be burdened with unnecessary barriers. He also wrote a letter calling Christians to a faith that could be seen in the way they spoke, treated the poor, resisted favoritism, and served one another. James had learned that leadership was not about position, but responsibility, and that all faithful work, whether going or staying, preaching or quietly carrying burdens, could be summed up in one word. Service. In this final episode of part two of our series, the pillar is tested. James must decide whether the faith he taught others to live is also a faith for which he is prepared to die. Acts of the Apostles, part two, chapter five.
My letter begins with a word that has stayed with me: trials. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because the testing of your faith produces perseverance. And perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. I wrote those words in the early years, when the trials I was describing were mostly the ordinary friction of life in a community learning to be something new: poverty, conflict, the slow erosion that comes from hoping for a long time without seeing the resolution. I did not know when I wrote them what kind of trial was coming for me, but I think I would write them again. By the time I am speaking these words in my mind, it is somewhere around the year 62. Festus has died, and his replacement Albinus has not yet arrived. And in the gap between governors, the high priest Ananus has room to act without Roman oversight. Ananus does not like us. This is not a surprise. The high priestly families have been uncomfortable with the movement since the beginning, since the arrest in Gethsemane, since the Sanhedrin hearing, since Pentecost, and the 3,000. They have tolerated us in seasons when other pressures were greater. But toleration is not acceptance, and in the absence of a Roman governor to keep the peace, Ananus sees an opportunity. He summons me to the temple. I have been in the temple courts more times than I can count. I have prayed here, taught here, settled disputes here. I know the smell of the incense and the sound of the morning sacrifice and the weight of the courts at festival time. This is not an unfamiliar place. But today it is being used differently. There are men positioned on the pinnacle, the high point of the temple wall, visible to the crowd below in the city. The intention is for me to be seen, for what I say here to carry. They want me to publicly renounce Jesus, to use my credibility with the people, and I have credibility with the people, even those who do not follow Jesus. My reputation for prayer and for uprightness has carried across lines I did not intend to cross. They want me to use that credibility to turn the crowd away from him. They have mistaken what my credibility is built on. They asked me to speak, so I spoke. Not what they expected, not what they wanted, but it is the only thing I know how to do. Say what is true, plainly, and let it land where it lands.
Go on, then.
Why do you ask me about the Son of Man? He is seated in heaven at the right hand of the great power, and he will come on the clouds of heaven.
The right hand?
That is all. That is all I said. Not a speech, not an argument, not a careful hedge designed to protect both my standing and my convictions. Just the thing I believe, stated as plainly as I know how to state it. The crowd gathered to hear. They began to cry out in response. Not against Jesus. For him. They had not come to renounce. They had come to listen to a man they trusted, and the man they trusted had told them where Jesus was and what he would do. Ananus had his answer. It was not the answer he wanted. They threw me from the wall. I survived the fall. I was on my knees praying, for them, for my accusers, in the manner of my brother before me, when someone struck me. I will not dramatize the details. What matters is not the mechanics of how it ended, but what was true right up until it ended. I was praying. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. I have been thinking about the word finish. In the workshop, when you finish a piece, you are not adding something new. You are completing what was already there, revealing the surface that the wood always had, removing what obscured it. The finishing is not separate from the making. It is the making arrived at its end. I think faith works that way. The trials do not add something foreign to what you are. They complete what was already there. They remove what was obscuring it. The person you are in the final moment is not different from the person you were on the ordinary days. It is the same person, finished, the surface revealed. I grew up in the same house as the most complete person I have ever known. I watched him work. I criticized him without justification. I stood outside while he named other people as his family. I did not follow him when he called the others. And then he appeared to me. And I believed. And I spent 30 years trying to build something in Jerusalem that would hold. I do not know if I succeeded. I know I tried. I know that what I tried to build was faithful to what I had seen in him. He finished well. On a cross, praying for the people who put him there, I have been trying in my own smaller way to finish in the same direction. On the pinnacle of the temple, looking out over the city he wept over, I had one more thing I could give, my testimony and my prayer. It turned out to be enough. My letter ends with a word about Elijah. Elijah was a human being, even as we are. He prayed earnestly that it would not rain, and it did not rain for 3.5 years. Again he prayed, and the heavens gave rain, and the earth produced its crops. Why Elijah? Because people were tempted to think prayer was for exceptional people, for prophets and apostles, and those who had seen and heard the things we had seen and heard. Not for ordinary people trying to live ordinary lives in difficult circumstances. Elijah was a human being, even as we are. So was Jesus. That is what the incarnation means. The Word became flesh and lived among us. And flesh means the workshop and the table and the tired eyes and the ordinary days. God did not send a principle or a symbol or a distant power. He sent a person, a brother, my brother. I knew him before anyone called him Lord. I knew him when he was the boy who fixed the warped doorframe on a Tuesday and came home smelling of sawdust and did not mention it. I knew him when the only audience for his extraordinary patience was a family that did not deserve it. That is the thing I have tried to say in everything I have written and taught and decided in 30 years of leading the church in Jerusalem. The person he was in the ordinary days is the same person he was on the cross and at the empty tomb and seated at the right hand of the Father. The extraordinary was always there, it was just not always visible. It is not always visible in us either. But it is there. The same Spirit, the same grace, the same invitation. Consider it pure joy, not because the trial is good, because of what it finishes into.
James began his letter by telling believers to consider their trials pure joy, not because suffering is pleasant or evil is good, but because trials reveal what faith is becoming. Perseverance, he wrote, must finish its work. By the end of his life, James understood that truth not merely as doctrine, but as experience. The final trial did not suddenly make him faithful. It revealed the faithfulness that had been formed through years of ordinary service, difficult decisions, patient leadership, prayer, repentance, and obedience. The same is true for us. We often imagine courage as something we will discover when the great moment arrives. But the person we become in the crisis is formed in the quiet choices that precede it. Faithfulness at the table prepares us for faithfulness before the crowd. Forgiving small offenses prepares us to pray for those who hurt us deeply. Speaking truth when little is at stake prepares us to stand when everything is at stake. Trials do not create a completely different person. They uncover the person grace has been shaping all along. James's life assures us that our failures need not have the final word. He once criticized Jesus, stood outside, refused to follow, and stayed away from the cross. Yet the risen Christ met him, called him by name, and transformed the rubble of unbelief into a life of steadfast service. James finished in the direction of Jesus, bearing witness, offering prayer, and entrusting the outcome to God. That is the invitation before each of us, not to seek suffering, but to allow perseverance to complete its work until the hidden life of Christ becomes visible in us.